Good morning, and welcome, and Happy New Year to everyone. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Northern Westchester. My name is Donna Moriarty. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of this fellowship, and I'm really happy to see everyone. Apologies for the chill in the air. We're working on the problem, but in the meantime, you just think of it as burning more calories. We welcome all, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that can sometimes separate people in the larger culture. Everyone is welcome to join us after the service for refreshments. If you're new, feel free to take any of the brochures or pamphlets on UUism that are on the wall outside near the door. There's also copies of our monthly newsletter that tell a lot about what this congregation is about and some of the activities that are going on. It gives you a real flavor of the fellowship. And please sign our guest book out in the entry hall. If you want to talk to someone afterwards, look for people with blue dots on their name tags. They are members, and they can answer any questions that you might have. Really, anybody with a name tag can tell you something, and if they're a little bit new like you, then you'll have made a friend. Because our services may differ from week to week, we encourage you to return two or three times to get a better understanding of the variety of our worship. And again, we welcome you all, and we look forward to getting to know everyone better after the service. We have a couple of announcements. There are some certainly listed in your order of service that you should take a moment to look at. Guest at Your Table is a program whereby the Unitarian Service Committee collects has people collect money at mealtimes to represent what a meal would cost in order to contribute this money around this time of the year to those in need around the globe. So we are collecting all this month. If you forgot and you don't want to fill up a box with coins and dollars, then you can just write a check, and the pay to information is listed inside the order of service. And if you totally don't know what guest at your table is, look at the December newsletter because it was in there. We also just want to let all the little ones know that there's an activity outside after we dismiss the children, so they'll have something to do. That will be fun, and they just need to get up and file out when we sing the song. And now I'm going to introduce Reverend Lynn, who is going to begin with an announcement.
Good morning. If any of you feel the urge to do a jumping jack or running in place a little bit, please feel free. I've been told that the furnace repairman is due momentarily, so we may feel heat before we leave here. Let's hope. I would just like to call to your attention something that the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee is doing. Not only are they sponsoring or using the Guest at Your Table program as their major fundraiser, but in light of the recent tsunami that has unfortunately visited much of Southern Asia in the last week or so, they are setting up a special fund for relief of those people affected by the tsunami. So even though there are many, many agencies that are collecting money and donations of various kinds for this very worthy cause, I would just like to bring to light and raise up before you the fact that our own denomination is doing something. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee works with various groups. In fact, they've got quite a bit going on in India right now, so my guess would be that they probably would concentrate on India, but also in Sri Lanka, I would imagine, too, and other areas. So I would encourage you to visit. You can make donations over the internet by just logging on to the uusc.org, and under tsunami you will find a way that you can donate directly via the internet. So I would strongly urge that you consider giving in this way. Now I bid you welcome to this place of possibility. This is love's hearth, the home of hope, a refuge for minds in search of truth unfolding, ever beautiful, ever strange. Here, compassion is our shelter, freedom, our protection from the storms of bigotry and hate. In this place, may we find comfort and courage. Here, may our sight become vision to see the unseen, to glimpse the good that is yet to be. And now the Weiss Hudson family will be lighting our chalice this morning. Please rise.
All you have to do is that.
Oh, I get it.
May the light of this flame illuminate our lives and strivings of the Spirit. May it heal misunderstanding and strengthen love.
Now let's say together the words of our affirmation found in your order of service. Love is the doctrine of this fellowship. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony. Thus do we covenant with one another. Before we begin our fellowship greeting, and robustly we can go and bustle around a little bit, I guess, I would like to call your attention to our first hymn, which we will be singing directly after, hymn number 347, Gather the Spirit. You may wish to turn to that before you now greet each other.
Thank you.
seated.
Now we have a very special time for our community, a time when we welcome new members. And we have such members are going to be signing our membership book right now. If they would like to come up, Jan Weiss, Gail Hudson, and their two children, Kierdeman and Navi Weiss. Well, they've passed all the tests and the drills. And they still wanted to join us. So we're very, very happy that they so decided to do so. Now, as it goes here, your parents will be signing the book today. Now, Kierdeman, you will be able to sign it after you finish the Coming of Age program. We do have junior memberships. You have to be 18 to be a full-fledged member. You'll get there one of these days, all right? But we're calling you up because you are a family here together, and you might be doing this in a few more months' time, because I know you're involved in the Coming of Age program right now. So this is what I will do. We have, with all of us witnessing, you'll be signing our book, saying that you are pledging yourselves as members here. Just sign your name and your address right there. Okay. Is it, well, no, your own. You are an individual member.
It's true.
We're big on individualism here in the UU world.
1204. Okay.
05.
Oh, five.
Oh dear. Hard for us to remember. And Kirsten's looking at this because he knows he might be doing this himself very soon, right?
Just write the right
yeah. All right, very good. You, we bid you welcome, you who have come with hope in your heart, with anticipation in your step, you who are seekers of a new faith, we bid you welcome as you enter our midst as a homecoming, where you have found room for your spirit. We bid you welcome, and we give you a couple of gifts. This is something that we give all our new members that you requested, and we are dutifully giving you. And also, each of you get a little flower as a special gift of welcome from
Thank
us
all.
Thank
you so much.
Here you go. The thorns have been plucked pretty much, so you don't have to worry too much about them. We try to make it a little difficult, but not too hard. Well, welcome all of you.
Thank you.
Let
Thank you
us
so much.
Let us all give them a round of applause. Now's the time we are going to be singing our children out. Is there going to be an announcement about what the children are doing, or is that set? I guess it's set. There's an activity?
Yes.
There's an activity for them. Okay, let us now sing the children out. This is another very important part of our Sunday worship time together, a time when we share our joys and concerns and sorrows with one another as a way that we can become closer to one another and be given opportunities to support one another. So if you have a joy or sorrow or concern you'd like to share, please feel free to come up, light a candle, it's around our chalice candle, and tell us what it is into the mic. And Linda's right there.
Hi, I'd like to light a candle for Jan and Gail and welcome them to the community. We're delighted to have you.
Good morning and Happy New Year, everybody.
I'm Vicki, and I'd like to light a candle of sorrow for all the people affected by the tsunami. For my friend Jim, who's living in Thailand, he lost two of his friends in the tsunami, and I wish him well today. And I've spent some time in India, and India on a good day can't take care of its people. So now more than ever, they need our help. So hopefully out of this terrible, terrible thing, something good will come, which is that we'll all reach down inside of us and realize that we have a lot to give. We're all very resourceful people, especially us Unitarians are very smart. We know how to do a lot with a small amount of money. So hopefully in some way our congregation will pull together and help. Thank you.
I'm Patty Colombo. From time to time, I've shared our progress of my mother-in-law moving. The closing is set for tomorrow. She will be moving from Hawthorne into Somers, which is just 3 miles from us, so it'll be much nicer to have her closer to us. In the next week, I'll be spending my time unpacking.
Hi, I'm Jan Weiss. I think the tragedy in Southeast Asia deserves at least 2 candles. I also wanted to come up for that reason. But also to tell you about an organization that I know in case you want to give to more than one place. There is an organization in Sri Lanka called Sarvodaya. It was started about 30 or 50 years ago by a science teacher who sent youth from the cities into the rural areas to do work projects. And this grew over time to be the largest non-governmental organization in Sri Lanka, serving thousands of villages. And they go in not with the attitude of, we're here to help you, but we're here to learn from you what needs to be done. And their motto is, no poverty, no affluence. And they really spread a lot of values of caring and sharing. So if you'd like to give money to that organization, I'll be very happy to give you more information after the service. Thank you.
Sounds like we put all of these on the bulletin board out in our fellowship hall.
Hi, I'm Ann Jaffe, and I've been sitting here thinking about the huge amount of changes and surprises and unbelievable things that have been happening since a year ago now. It feels like this year has been an amazing explosion of things happening that I never would have conceived of happening, and the tsunami being one of them. And I just want to express my own sense of prayer that the difficulty of the situations we all face can create in us an openness of mind and heart, and a belief, a faith that by joining together in all these different ways, we really can recreate the world in a new way, a completely new way that will be sustainable and will be full of joy for everyone.
Amen.
I'm Donna Moriarty, I have a lot of things on my mind and in my heart, and in my environment, our environment. And so this is a candle without words.
And this final candle will be for any joys or concerns or sorrows that might be unspoken here, but still very much with us. Let us keep all of them, the spoken and the unspoken ones, in our minds and in our hearts and in our prayers this coming week. This morning's reading is from my ethics course, actually. It's a story, and I'm going to tell it in story form. It's written by Reverend Richard. Well, he tells his own version of it, and I'll tell mine. But it's a story that I think speaks to this morning's topic. He speaks about a man named Hodes, who was an Israeli soldier, an Israeli ambulance worker, kind of like an EMT, during the Six-Day War in Israel, some many years ago now, a war that they fought against the Arabs of that time in Israel. And Hodes was standing by his ambulance one day after a battle, and he noticed behind a shrub that there was an Arab man, apparently an Arab-looking man, who had an arm that was all bloodied and with a separating source on it or a separating wound on it. And the man was sort of hiding behind the shrub, but knowing that there was a Red Cross sign on the truck, he knew it was a medical vehicle, and I think he was hoping that he could maybe get some help. And Hodes decided he would help the man, and he took the man from behind the shrub and treated him, even though he was supposedly, quote, the enemy, unquote. And so shortly thereafter, as soon as he just finished treating the man, two Israeli soldiers came up, and they said, "This man is an Arab. We will take him." And he quickly put the man in the truck and said, "No, I will not let you have this man." He says, "Well, if you won't let us have him, we will take care of that. We might even take you." And they went off and looking for a superior officer and said that they would vow to return in a moment. And in that time, he told the Arab man, "For your own good, please go." And the man did. And so he had to face the superior officer who said, "Well, what did you do with the prisoner?" And he had to face the fact that he had let, supposedly, a prisoner of war go. And he said of that time, he said, "I could not do less." So they had hate in their hearts. They meant to do him harm and not just take him prisoner. And he says, "Something would have shriveled within me if I did not help that Arab man." This congregation is the community of ourselves. Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. Now, this morning's offering will be taken. Thank you. Our responsive reading this morning, number 505, found in the back of your hymnal, is from the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and become holy ourselves. Evoking the presence of the great compassion, let us fill our hearts with our own compassion towards ourselves and towards all living beings.
Let us pray that we know ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other.
With humility, with awareness of the existence of life and of the sufferings that are going on around us, let us practice the establishment of peace in our hearts and on earth. Amen. Now let us sing together our next hymn, number 93, Mercy, Pity, Peace, and Love. Character. The last session of the ethics course that I've been teaching this fall is concerns itself with character. Character, as Richard Gilbert describes it, has to do with integrity, an inner sense of right and wrong that remains consistent over time. It has to do with the inner an outer person being one and the same. This time of New Year's resolutions is such a time when we tend to examine our characters. Amid such promises to ourselves that we will eat less, exercise more, kick a bad habit, our resolutions having to do with improving our characters, our sense that we are in right relationship with ourselves and the world around it. An essential component of our sense of integrity, I feel, is compassion. And thus, compassion is something I invite you all to consider in making any New Year's resolutions you may be pondering beginning this year of 2005. Buddhists are ones who have raised compassion in the human heart to its highest degree. It is an essential component to develop in order to achieve enlightenment, the ultimate for Buddhists. Buddha himself was considered to be the great compassion. And in more modern times, the Dalai Lama is considered to be the human embodiment of compassion here on earth by his fellow Tibetan Buddhists. Buddha lived in India and founded this religion a few hundred years before the time of Jesus, who founded Christianity, which has much to say about compassion as well. There are some scholars who claim that Jesus, before his 3 years of public preaching, traveled to India and learned about Buddhism there and brought home some of its tenets, compassion being among them. More likely, however, is what other scholars have claimed, that there were so many caravans traveling through Israel and Judea at the time that all Jesus would have had to do was befriend some caravan travelers who had journeyed to India and brought back different theologies from the Far East. Throughout history, different theologies have been known to mix and meld and adapt and change from their influences on one another. No matter how he acquired this idea, Jesus did often speak of compassion in various ways in many of his teachings. For instance, he said, "If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. But love your enemies, do good, expecting nothing in return. Be you merciful, be you perfect." In Aramaic, the common language Jesus spoke with the people, the word for merciful, for perfect here, is lamramne, which can mean compassion, love, a long, drawn-out breath, extending grace, or an answer to prayer. Its root meaning in Aramaic is very different from the Greek translation of the root word meaning mercy, with which we are more familiar. The Aramaic word rama is the word for room, for womb, excuse me, is the word for womb. This leads to the image of birthing mercy, birthing compassion, of embracing to one's center all of creation. As Christian mystic Meister Eckhart once wrote, "We are all meant to be mothers of God." Mercy and compassion are meant to be all-embracing, just as a mother's arms are all-embracing. When we go back to these ancient meanings of the word mercy and perfect found in the New Testament, we can discover a very important point for developing our characters. And that is, if we are birthing something, we are acting. Compassion here is not just a feeling of another's pain, empathizing with it. It implies action. It goes even further than embracing those who suffer, showing care and concern for them. It implies that one must do something to correct that which is causing the pain, the suffering. It implies that one must attempt to make it right, to make justice. It implies that one needs to act, to birth true active compassion, to make things right and just and good. Be you merciful. Be you perfect. Be you compassionate, thus takes on a new meaning. It is even seen more clearly in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, first written in Hebrew, so closely aligned to the Aramaic. For in the Hebrew Bible, the word we often translate in English as compassion or mercy is the Hebrew word hesed. This Hebrew word implies an action that we do not see implied in our own English translation. For instance, a Hebrew phrase might say, we do hesed with someone. Or, what does God ask of you except to do hesed and love justice? Do hesed. For much of Christian history, the Western world has sentimentalized the idea of compassion to mean a feeling only and no action, no attempts at correcting the pain and suffering that causes us to respond with a feeling of care and concern. Christian theologian Matthew Fox claims that Christians are more apt to emote with Mary, the mother of Jesus, as she helplessly agonized at the foot of Jesus' cross, and nothing more. It is the same kind of sentimentalism that centers on the pain and suffering of Jesus in his passion, his experiences culminating in his torture and death on the cross. Mel Gibson's recent movie depiction of the Passion of Christ certainly does that. Fox contends that there is no emphasis on action here. No emphasis on the injustice of it all. No emphasis on the need to see it as incorrect, unjustified behavior on the part of the tormentors, who did unfortunately hold all the power here. Well, as you can imagine, such criticisms of the way Christians view compassion and of Jesus' passion on the cross have gotten Matthew Fox, as a Catholic Dominican priest, in trouble with the Roman Catholic Church. He has been stripped of his Catholic priestly role and has now become an Episcopal priest. It seems that sect is more tolerant of such possible heretical views. If one considers the original meanings of those all-important words for compassion and mercy found in the Bible, as Fox did, we can see that something more is demanded of us than just empathy, care, and concern for our fellow human beings. We need to respond in an active way. We must be astir with deeds and doing in our compassionate response. I once met a man, a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church I once served in Connecticut some years ago now, who felt in his bones the rightness of this viewpoint. His name was, truthfully, Buster Brown. Truthfully, no relation to the shoe people. Deceased now, he was a man in his 80s who had led a full and varied life when I got to know him. Born in American, he spent his youth and early adulthood in China, first as a child of a diplomat there, and then as a businessman on his own. During World War II, he got caught, as did many other Americans and Europeans, by the Japanese invasion of China, and found himself in a prison of war camp along with other Americans and Europeans. One notable prisoner in his camp was a well-known Christian missionary from Scotland. This missionary was the one who had won an Olympic medal in the 1920s and gained fame because he was so staunchly religious, he refused to participate in an Olympic race scheduled on a Sunday, the Lord's Day of Rest. You may remember this missionary, for he was portrayed in the movie Chariots of Fire. Well, Buster Brown told me he had not much respect for that missionary whom he had met and with whom he shared that prison of war camp. You see, the conditions in that camp, especially as the war wore on, became deplorable, and many people were ill and dying with little food, medicine, and other basic necessities. Buster and others who were able tried to glean a bit more food by hook or by crook for the people at the camp. Some medicine or clothes or something that would ease the pain and suffering of the people, let them live a little bit longer and perhaps live to the end of the war. This was dangerous work, for being caught acquiring food, medicine, or other items by unofficial means meant certain and immediate death at the hands of the Japanese, often horrifically so. But this missionary would not be a part of any of that. Instead, he would try to gather people around him to speak to them about his particular kind of Christianity, to try to convert them to his beliefs as a means of supposedly saving their souls before they died. Buster said he had little respect for such a man who could not care for the people's earthly plight and would not lift a finger to try and alleviate their earthly pain and suffering. I think that Buster would agree that compassion is a foundation for sharing our aliveness and building a more human world. It is working in this world to actively help humanity in any way you are compassionately moved to do. It could be as varied as working as in an inner city slum, advocating for an oppressed person or people, or for the homeless and needy, writing your congressperson, or giving in some way to the relief agencies now trying mightily to help those in the devastated regions affected by the tsunami, or any number of other actions. I think my friend Buster would also agree with the noted mythologist and philosopher Joseph Campbell, who said, "Compassion for me is just what the word says. It is suffering with. It is an immediate participation in the suffering of another to such a degree that you forget yourself and your own safety and spontaneously do what is necessary." It was that definition of compassion that spurred Buster and his fellow inmates on in spite of the danger to their own lives, because they saw the horror and the suffering of the people around them and responded compassionately in an active sense. They did not pilfer only for themselves, which would have been easy enough to hide from the Japanese, but they worked and stole for many, which put them in a much greater danger. This definition of compassion makes one realize that we are all connected to one another, that we are all interdependent beings. In this definition of compassion, the writer Frederick Buchner said about, "Compassion is the capacity for feeling what it is like inside somebody else's skin. It is the knowledge that there can never really be any peace and joy for me until there is peace and joy for you." We are all part of the interdependent web of all existence, our seventh Unitarian Universalist principle says. When one of us suffers, we all suffer. When one helps another individual, all humanity is helped as well. This type of compassion, this type of interdependence, also implies a responsibility. And facing this responsibility, acting on it, can be daunting for us. For it can require much courage for us at times, as it did for my friend Buster. And it may ask us, invite us, to do things with which we are unfamiliar and perhaps with which we are uncomfortable. There is a story that illustrates this well. The famed novelist Bernard Malamud corresponded with a fellow novelist who lived in Russia in the height of the Cold War. This Russian novelist wished to publish one of his books, but the Russian government did not give permission for him to do so because his book was considered subversive, for it pointed out the injustices, the oppression in Russia at the time. So this Russian man wrote Bernard Malamud, asking him to help him smuggle out his book and help get it published, at least in the free world, so that people would know what was going on in Russia. He wrote to Malamud metaphorically saying, "We are members of humankind. If I am drowning, you must assist and save me." At first, Malamud protests, for it was no easy thing that writer asked him to do. He could find himself entangled in a Cold War horror. So he wrote the Russian saying that he feared he might be unable to swim in unknown waters. He received a prompt response which said, "If not, then throw me a rope." There are many of us who may not be able to respond compassionately in a way some others may be able to do. There are many of us who cannot swim in such treacherous waters and wouldn't know how to save someone even if they could swim. But most of us are able to at least throw a rope to someone who is drowning. Most of us can do something, even on a most elementary, basic level. This might not be easy to do with someone with whom we don't know or don't know well. It is even more difficult to do with someone you dislike or even consider to be your enemy, as Jesus' teachings point out. Malamud could not really form a close attachment with that Russian behind the Iron Curtain, but that Russian was a fellow human being in need of compassion, in need of compassionate aid, compassionate action. Being truly compassionate means that we are bound to act. It is following numerous injunctions from the Buddhist and Jewish and Christian faiths to ever strive to be compassionate, to be merciful, to be perfect. May this become a New Year's resolution for you this year, to be you compassionate. May you make compassion an action in your lives more than a feeling. May it become for you something you practice every day in your lives, no matter what circumstances you may find yourselves in. Amen. And now let us sing our last hymn, number 131, Love Will Guide Us. Unitarian minister over 100 years ago, I give you this. He said, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can still do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. Now let us say the words of our chalice extinguishing together. Carry and love until we meet again. Now let us sing together.
Go now in peace.